We're gonna start talking about something called entitlement harvesting, and then I prepared a couple of questions that I would love to like check what you people think about. Right, so I have two scenarios here on the board. One, I mean, in both cases, we have the ground state of the electromagnetic field thing, for example, according to inertial observers, right? So that's what we call the vacuum state of the field in flat spacetime. And then we have two atoms in two different situations. One of them, they interact for a finite time with the field. And in scenario one, they're time-like, strictly time-like separated. And in scenario two, they are strictly space-like separated. Okay, two different scenarios. And then I ask three questions for each scenario. Okay, so let's see. And we have three questions. They are yes or no kind of questions, so one bit of information per question. Question one, can they communicate? And the answer of the question is, okay, does the, so they start in a completely uncorrelated state, they don't know about each other. And then we ask, does after the interaction, both interactions happen, after the interactions, does the state of rho B depend on the initial state of rho A? That's what we call communicate. Okay? Rho B feels the existence of rho A. So I want to ask everyone here in the room, maybe because it's a Friday, I guess fewer people come on Friday, yeah?
I think they went to see the Avengers last night.
Ah, all right. It's kind of sad though, we're so few. Anyway, so what do you think for the strictly time-like case, can they communicate? What do you think?
Yes.
You will write yes. One yes. For the, someone new. Okay, cool. For the space, for the space-like case, can they communicate? You would say no. For the time-like case, can they get entangled?
Yeah.
No, no, don't interfere yet. Let's go one by one.
Is this just me?
Yes. No. We're gonna go one by one to give people time to come. Be brave, it doesn't matter. There's no wrong answer.
Yes.
You would say yes.
Why not?
And third, are your answers dimension, any of your answers dimension dependent? You'd say no. All right. Oh, by the way, second, for the space-like case, can they get entangled?
Yes.
For the space-like case, are the answers dimension dependent?
No.
All right.
Probably.
How about you? What would you say? Again, reminding you of the scenario because you've just arrived. We have two atoms. They are interacting with the ground state of the electromagnetic field, according to inertial observers, in flat spacetime. They start in a state that is completely uncorrelated, and they couple with the field for a finite time. And two scenarios. In one case, they couple while strictly time-like separated, in the time they couple. The other one, they're strictly space-like separated. And I'm asking three questions. Can they communicate? So does the final state of rho B depend on the initial state of rho A? Can they get entangled? And are your answers dimension dependent? Okay, now go, you go. Time-like case, question one. Can they communicate?
No.
You say no. Second, can they get entangled?
No.
And are the answers dimension dependent? All right. Wow.
I think I'm just gonna say no for all of them.
What?
I think I'm just gonna say no for all of them.
No for all of them. All right, Andrew.
Okay. So for time-like, yes, yes, no.
Space-like.
No, yes, yes.
All right. Your turn.
Okay. I'll go with, the least popular answer for everything. So.
Okay. I can calculate that.
Yes. Yes. No. No. Yes. No. Yes.
There you go. That's nice. You gave me a procedural answer, which is kind of nice. All right. Let's go with Jose. Well, Jose, you're not allowed, I think. Oh, but maybe at the end. You're the second to last.
Okay.
What about you?
For yes, yes, no. And no, yes,
no. All right. You just arrived, but do you know what the question is?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you answer that?
Say yes, no, 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 yes, no.
We have two more to go. Jose.
Well, I'm pretty confident in the time-like scenario. I think it's yes, yes, no. And in the space-like, I'm not quite sure about the last one, but I think it's no, yes, and maybe yes.
And Aggie, let's go to the last one.
Yeah, I think I would say the same as Jose.
So what is it?
Yes, yes, no, yes, yes.
Right. So let's see what the consensus tells us. And let's see if the consensus is correct. So we get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, definitely. This is a consensus yes. This is a consensus. This is a tie. 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3. Oh, no, no. It's a yes as well. And 3 is almost overwhelming no, except for one person. Here we get almost no. Here we get yes. Here we get 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, it's a tie. Okay. Cool. This may make us take 2 lectures for this, but this is cool because we're gonna learn so many things. Let's see if this works. Oh yeah, oh my God. They've repaired it.
Give it 10 minutes and it'll break.
All right, people. So you are saying consensus, not you individually, but the consensus says that when the two detectors, or the two atoms are time-like separated, they can communicate, they can get entangled, and thus those statements are not dimension dependent. For the space-like case, you say that they cannot communicate except for one person. I would be super interested to discuss about the person who said yes there. what do you say yes there?
The high-risk, high-reward scenario.
Right. The thing is that maybe if I tell you that, you probably should have left the room or something like that. Because I'm doing quantum field theory, right, which is by construction relativistic. But no, it could be because of an approximation. So it's a good answer, though. I kind of like those answers a lot. You say that they cannot communicate. You say they can get entangled. And you're not sure about dimension dependence. OK, let's see. Can you remind me how you communicate through? Thinking of quantum field theory now, objects of the field, like objects that are in the nature of the quantum field theory, that are associated with communication. Like, imagine that I do think of, even if you want local algebras, if I make a measurement here in the field operator here, can I learn about the field operator elsewhere? What is the condition for me to learn about it? Do you know? In other words, when you're building a quantum field theory, there you go. So something called microcausality of the theory, which is demanding that the commutator expectation, what is called the Pauli-Jordan, that we call the Pauli-Jordan. So for communication, it's mediated by the expectation of the commutator, the Pauli-Jordan, right? How about, by the way, this thing, does this thing have support on space-like separated events? No, if the theory is causal, this thing is zero for it's equal to zero for x, x prime space length. Therefore, the answer to can they communicate in the space-like case can be reduced to is the commutator supported or the expectation of the commutator on the, I say the vacuum, so in the vacuum state of the field, for a free theory, it's in state independent anyways, supported in space-like area, and the answer is no, it's not. Microcausality of the theory guarantees that. So the answer to the one space-like, scenario A, space-like is no, and you got that one right. Oh, no, no, that's not what I want. Nice. Okay. Now, let's go with question two. Can they get entangled? What is, keep in mind, I kind of skipped time like one, so we'll talk about that later. Can they get entangled if time-like or space-like? And the question here is, okay, same as the Pauli-Jordan controls the ability to communicate, to find out on measurements here what happens elsewhere, what controls the ability of getting the entanglement in the field? You guys know? Is the field correlator. Okay, the two-point correlator, the proper correlator, you see? So if I write here, hopefully, no one can see this board, huh? Oh, they can? Okay, okay. So the two-point correlator of the field, we define it like this, like the proper correlator, not the convex. The one that actually tells you about the correlations. It's a prime. That's the correlator of the field in point x and x prime. Agreed, everyone? When you can factor the two-point function into product of the one-point functions, there's no correlations. Agreed, everyone? All right. The reason why we usually talk about this object, though, is because usually rho is a state that has zero average, because we talk about the vacuum or we talk about thermal states. So then it's the same to talk about the two-point function, the Wyman function, and the two-point correlator, the convex two-point correlator. Agreed, everyone? Okay, if it's the state of the vacuum, right, as this case, well, these two things are zero. The expectation of the amplitude of the field everywhere in the vacuum is zero. Agreed, everyone? Okay. Right, so this object controls when there are correlations in the field. Those correlations could be classical or quantum. If it's a pure state, arguably they would be quantum. But in any case, it's the support of this object, not the commutator, that controls when the two atoms can get entangled. Agreed, everyone? Now, question for you. Is this supported in the space-like area, this object here? Does it cancel, or does it not in space-like?
It has support.
It has support outside of the light cone. So in general, the answer to can they get entangled while space-like and time-like is a yes. You got this one right, too. Because wherever, in principle, wherever this thing is supported, they will get entangled. All right. Now we go to question three. You kind of overwhelmingly said no to dimension dependence, and you tied in the space-like case. And then we go to question one, time-like. Question one, time-like, the answer is back to what we had on the board, right? The answer here, we had that wherever the Pauli-Jordan is supported, we will have communication, right? Now, who knows what the commutator is for, I don't know, a massless 3 plus 1 field? Have you seen that in your quantum field theory? That is usually seen. People do it, and then you get. Have you done that ever?
Is it just in the light cone?
Aha. It's a delta function. It's 1 over the spatial separation and then a delta of the light cone, right? So the Pauli-Jordan let's do several cases of support. Let's write the support. Let's take the point x to be the origin of this. And let's write here the support of the Pauli-Jordan for the case of, say, the easiest, massless scalar 1 plus 1, 2 plus 1, 3 plus 1. My super drawing skills. I don't know why I don't just do that. Yeah. All right. So this is a section in each of them, but then 1 plus 1 to represent. So in 1 plus 1, in 2 plus 1, and 3 plus 1. So in 3 plus 1, the Pauli-Jordan is only supported on the light cone. There's only a singular part to it, which is the delta part. It's a delta on the light cone divided by the distance. So in 3 plus 1D, communication, time-like communication, 3 plus 1D, flat space-time, communication in the time-like scenario is not possible if they're strictly time-like. This is the same as in flat space-time with 3 plus 1 dimensions, if I get a laser pointer and I beam an empty chair like that, if there's no one there to receive it and the beam goes away, no one will receive the message later on. You cannot come in 20 minutes, sit there, and get the message back, right? That is, it's not possible to communicate in time-like scenarios, in strictly time-like separation, if the commutator is not supported, which is the case of 3 plus 1 dimensions flat. This is what we call, by the way, the Strong-Huygens principle. Strong-Huygens principle is that, the radiation is a classical result. The radiation green function, which is the same as this guy, the radiation green function has support only on the light cone. We will discuss more about that because we will talk about communication in RQI. So you can actually do the, sometimes they leave an echo, the message leave echoes that you can actually recover later on. Actually, most of the times, but it so happens that 3 plus 1 D flat and 5 plus 1 D flat and 7 plus 1 D flat, all those cases, the commutator has support only on the light cone, strictly on the light cone. Who knows the commutator in 1 plus 1D? That's another one that is done usually in theory. No one? It's actually pretty simple. It's a constant in the future light cone and minus that constant in the past light cone. And the constant, I think, is pi over 2, if I remember well. Or, well, I pi over 2. Something like that. Don't quote me on this. I will compute it anyways, but. So the support is here and it's homogeneous. So in 1 plus 1D, you can communicate time lag, which is kind of weird, right? So you said, oh yeah, causal structure. Most of you said yes because, right, time lag means you can exchange signals. But keep in mind the field is massless. So time lag communication means I beam something, an empty chair, and someone in 20 minutes comes and gets the message after the beam is gone. Well, that thing in 1 plus 1D should be possible, in principle, because the Pauli-Jordan is supported. And in 2 plus 1D, same thing. It is supported, but it fades. I tried to do the fading thing. It's exponential, it's polynomial tails decay as you increase the distance. And of course, if you increase the dimension, for even spatial dimensions, you get, as you increase the dimension, a stronger suppression polynomially. But in odd spatial dimensions, the Pauli-Jordan is only supported on the light cone. Okay? So the answer to 3, time-like, is actually yes. It's actually yes. It does. Your ability to communicate in time-like separation depends on the dimensions of the space, and in fact depends on many things. Yeah?
Sorry, is that decaying towards the light cone or away from it?
Away. So it's stronger here.
It's peaked on the light cone.
Stronger here, just wait until we consider curved space times, in which it's kind of fun. We'll get there.
What did you say this function was called?
Pauli-Jordan. Pauli-Jordan distribution. That's language from algebraic field theory. So the other one, so the anti-commutator is called the Hadamard distribution. The commutator is called the Pauli-Jordan distribution, the expectation of course. All right. In space-like separation, the amount of entanglement you can get will definitely depend on the dimension. But the fact that you can, in principle, get entangled does not. So the answer here would be no, but a yes in there, because communication. So you got it mostly right, except for this consensus, which you got right. The only The high risk paid off in that one. All right, can we switch off the lights? Nice, thank you. All right, so let's talk a little bit. Oh, this is the, I kind of have this for fun. This is actually for, it's coming from Loop Quantum Gravity and also with arguments. So it's a popular science thing. And they say like the bubbling out of nothingness. That I kind of like, it's kind of very sensational, so let's not just read this. But I like the fact that the vacuum is not empty. As we discussed, the notion of particle depends on the observer, right? So the vacuum being empty or not depends on who you ask the question and how you ask the question, right? Oh, do you mean if I couple to the vacuum for a finite time, or do you mean if I wait for infinite times with a detector? The answer changes. Detectors will click more or less, depending on all that. You will be not surprised now. Well, let me just remind you that thing that I saw you at the beginning, that in the case of space-like separation, you can get entangled. And there's a very easy way to illustrate this with our quantum field theory, or maybe with, depending on what you call this, right? Which is a chain of harmonic oscillators in the ground state, and then you're given a problem. So I don't know, someone, I don't know, for you would be, imagine David Corey comes to you and says, here's a problem for you. I want to get A and B entangled. They're harmonic oscillators, and I want to get them entangled. And you're not allowed to make them interact. What you're allowed to do, though, is to couple them locally, one of them to the place I in this lattice and the other one to the place J in this lattice. Can you tell me how to get them entangled? And then there are two possible mechanisms. Number one, of course, as we saw, is communication, right? You can actually get them, so you do something, you couple A to I, and then that introduces excitations, phonons, if you want, in the lattice. The phonons travel to B. Be coupled to those excitations, right? And then through that, they get correlated. So that's a way to get them entangled. But of course, that way of entangling, of course, is limited by the speed of sound. You cannot do that faster than the time it takes for the perturbation to propagate. Now, of course, there's another possibility. The ground state of the lattice, right? Remember the Hamiltonians. The individual Hamiltonians for every harmonic oscillator is p squared divided by 2m, plus something that depends on x squared, right? So one half m omega square, no, m omega square, x square, m omega x square, no, omega square, there's an omega square there, I'm pretty sure. Right, and then you have the interaction Hamiltonian. When you couple the two of them, what you have is energy and exchange energy that goes with the delta x, the elongation of the two. So x j, minus x j minus 1. When you expand that, you get a term of the form xx. The terms in the interaction Hamiltonian of the form xx do not commute with the p squared terms of the local Hamiltonians, and therefore you cannot diagonalize the local Hamiltonian and the global Hamiltonian in the same basis. There are two natural bases, if you want, here. The local one, which is, oh yeah, the eigenbasis of the local Hamiltonians, or the normal mode, the eigenstate of the global Hamiltonian. Right? Both are complete bases, so they span the whole Hilbert space of the chain of harmonic oscillators. But of course, because the two Hamiltonians don't commute, they don't diagonalize in the same basis. And in particular, in this case, that means that it cannot be that the vacuum state of the global Hamiltonian is just the tensor product of the ground state of every individual harmonic oscillator, of the local ground state, if you want. It cannot be, because that would mean that they share an eigenvector, which they don't. OK? All right. So if we actually express, OK, fine. So imagine that I have the ground state of the lattice, and I trace out all the lattice except for I and j, what am I left with? And I'm left with a state that is not separable. I don't know why I wrote a k here. There's a typo, obviously. The typo isn't here. It's definitely non-separable. That's the point. Oh, no, that's fine. It's pk. But I need another index k in the rows. Anyway. It's a non-separable state. And you know about that. If you are into ADS, CFT, and this kind of stuff, you know that even you could tell me, oh, yeah, no, there would be kind of a decay that depends on the dimensions, right? How strongly the correlations decay, and you go far away. Usually, you don't do this thing. You do kind of like pieces with the rest, right? Because then it's a pure state and you can use entanglement entropy. But if not, there are other ways to do it and you get area loss and decays and you know all that. Uh-huh. This is a different story that I won't tell today, but they are entangled in a dimension-dependent kind of way. So if there is already entanglement in the lattice, then there's another mechanism. You couple A and B to the lattice, the coupling looks random, as in like A doesn't feel any meaningful signal when couples to the lattice. It's just what we call fluctuations. B, same thing. Experimentalists may even call them dark counts. I don't know. But then they see the random signal in a way that's correlated because there's entanglement between the two. So if there is entanglement between I and J, by locally coupling A to I and B to J, you can swap that entanglement and then acquire it for A and B. And therefore, you steal the entanglement from the lattice and put it into A and B. So swapping ground state entanglement, this is not limited by the speed of sound. Any questions? We already did that in the past. All right, so before continuing, let's just do a little bit of math to illustrate this. I need the lights and the words, if that's possible. Thank you. And the screen can be taken off too? Taken off? Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Oh, but the lights were good, I think. All right. All right, so let's analyze this scenario from the point of view of particle detectors, which is what we've been using to understand this. Imagine that we have two particle detectors. On the ground state, in the ground state. Coupled to the vacuum.
Yeah.
Of a scalar field. All right, so if we have that, then the initial state would be something of the form, let's call it rho zero, is, well, of course, rho A, zero, rho B, zero, rho field, zero. But then in our case, we said that they're both in the ground. And the field is in the vacuum state. All right, and then I'll give you the interaction Hamiltonian between the two atoms and the field, HI. Let's say that the atoms are commoving. So inertial, two inertial atoms that are commoving with each other to simplify the problem a lot. And then the coupling is of the form sum where nu is A and B of lambda nu sine nu of t, then integral dn x f nu x minus x nu, then mu nu of t, and then phi of tx. All right, so this is the Andrew DeWitt interaction Hamiltonian, assuming they both are commoving. So you have two profiles, FA and FB, and they're centered at different points. So they are at some distance with each other, okay, which is the difference between XA and XB. All right. So, of course, as usual, we get time evolution. Would be, oh yeah, sure. So rho at a time t would be equal to to U, row 0, U dagger, where U is time order exponential of minus I integral as usual. Now, in general, we don't know how to solve this non-perturbatively. Let's do a Dyson expansion in here. So what I'm gonna do is U is equal to 1 plus U1 plus U2 plus things of order lambda cubed. Right, and then we expand that and we get right. This is rho t plus things. Well, I'm not going to say here, plus things of order lambda cube, and saying here, of course. Right. So, by the way, note, if you read some of the first papers like on entanglement harvesting, they make a mistake. And the mistake is a bad kind of, it's the kind of mistake that could fail you quantum mechanics if you do it. Is right. The papers are correct. When they obtain those results, the results are correct, but they do an inconsistent expansion. So just warning you about it. If you read or anything, they did the following. They said, "Oh right, so you get a psi zero because it's a pure state at the beginning. So then you evolve with U. We expand U to." We expand U to second order. And then we apply it to psi zero. And then they compute, they go from here to the density matrix by applying this parenthesis, dagger in here, and they call this the density matrix. That density matrix is an inconsistent expansion. Inconsistent application of perturbation theory. Do you people see why? If you do that, you're going to get things that are of order 3 and order 4. You're going to cross 1 with 2, and you're going to cross 2 with 2. But if you get things of order 3 and order 4, you are missing the ones that come from U3 and U4. So you cannot go, if you do this, you're doing an inconsistent expansion that could lead to errors. And those errors, I can see, and we will discuss when I write the matrix why they include them anyways. It's fine, because in the end, the final result, they just neglect everything that is above order 2. So all the terms order 3 and order 4, while incorrect, they are not part of the result. So the paper is result fact, result-wise is fine, but it's not fine in terms of what they're doing with the math, the expansions, right? Just so you know if you read them. This is only one. No, there are papers that follow that one that did that wrong as well. But we'll discuss that a bit. That is corrected now. No one nowadays that does that, okay? All right, so anyway, so don't do that. Don't do it at the level of the state and then take the one and the other, right? The Ken and the Bra to get the rho. Do it directly at the level of the rho because you know then that this is gonna be rho zero plus, and you get the corrections if you want, like U1, rho 0 plus rho 0 U1 dagger plus U1 rho 0 U1 dagger plus U2 rho 0 plus rho 0 U2 dagger plus things that are of order lambda cube. And this is the consistent expansion. Here we get the zeroth order terms. Here you get the first order terms. Here you get the second order terms. Okay? All right. And you don't continue, because if you cross this with this and get a third order term, well, you also need to include U3 in there. All right. Questions so far? Of course, we know from Dyson expansion, right, that U1 is minus I integral minus infinity to infinity dt h I of t. And we know that U2, it's equal to integral this. So yeah, so minus, that cancels that one, but that minus cancels itself. Yes, so like this. Sorry for the rambling. That was me remembering things. All right. Agreed, people? Well, here we have a nested integral. That comes from the time ordering of the exponential. And that's also the reason why we don't have coefficients. All right. All right. Okay, so we can now calculate what we are interested in is not the final, the total final state. We want the state rho AB of the two detectors at the end of the interaction, which is, of course, is get the total state evolved in time, but of course trace out the field. All right? And of course this thing is also going to be rho AB 0 plus rho AB 1 plus rho AB 2 plus things of order lambda cube. Now, very easy to see that for the vacuum is very easy, but in general for more states, right? For the vacuum, what is going to be rho 1 AB? Well, let's look at it. For the vacuum, you start from the vacuum, these terms, so the rho 0, is already out, is this thing. So the one should come from this. The one that is ordered one should come from these terms when you trace out the field. Agreed? But you're applying either from the left and from the right a Hamiltonian that will either raise or lower the state. Agreed? Only on one side. So the state of the field will be non-diagonal in this correction. Agreed? The first order correction is non-diagonal in the Fock basis of the field. Agreed, people? When you trace out a non-diagonal state, strictly non-diagonal state, you get zero. In fact, you can prove for any states that the one-point function, the expectation of the field, is zero, then, like the vacuum state, but also any a thermal state would be the same. States that are diagonal in the Fock basis, okay, they will give you no one-point function. And therefore, what you get is that for the vacuum state, the trace of rho AB1, which is equal to the trace over the field of U1 rho 0 plus rho 0 U1 is just 0. So there's no first order correction. And by the way, by the same token, we know that all the odd terms have the same problem. You apply a field operator from the left or from the right a known number of times. States with a zero odd point function, like the vacuum state in this case, are zero. So we know that actually we could write a four in here. There's no third order correction either. Questions or anything? All right. Now, we can expand this, and we get the following. It's going to be a long one. Let me do it here. So, all right, so I need to compute rho 2 AB. Well, if you substitute, you get the following. Sum on nu eta, and then you get, of course, nu eta, and that multiplies. The order 1 squared terms So dt, dt prime, that are of this form, t prime nu eta t, and then I get mu t prime of nu, yeah, rho 0 ab mu t of eta. And that multiplies the, let me call it a calligraphic W. Calligraphic W of, if you want, x. X nu, or maybe t, x nu, comma t prime, x eta, where x nu and eta, remember, is the position of the center of mass of detector 1 and detector 2. All right, minus, so that was the order 1 squared, and now we have the order 2 terms, minus integral minus infinity to infinity dt. Integral minus infinity to t dt prime, and we get x nu of t, x eta of t prime, and that multiplies mu nu of t, mu eta of t prime, rho a b 0, yeah, that's fine. Multiplying the W calligraphic of X nu, T, X nu, comma, T prime, X eta, plus the other term that's missing, rho AB zero, mu eta t prime, mu nu t, calligraphic W of t prime x eta t x nu. Close, close. So this is where, of course, the calligraphic W Tx,
let's go, okay.
Tx nu, let's just call it like this. Tx nu, t prime, x eta, is the pullback of the Wyman function on the smear trajectory of the detector. So this is going to be the integral, the dimension, what am I calling the dimensions here?
I don't know where I wrote.
Anyway, let's just use the number of spatial dimensions, integral number of spatial dimensions prime of f of x minus x nu, f x prime minus x eta, and then of course the Wyman function, which is the trace over the field of phi tx, phi t prime x prime, and the state of the field. So this is the Wyman function. Wyman function rho tx t prime x prime. All right. This is what you get when you expand the whole thing. Question.
In the argument of the first integral, in the argument of the calligraphic W, mm-hmm. T is paired with nu and T prime with eta.
That's right.
It's opposite everywhere else.
Correct.
Okay.
This is the first order, this is the second order. Works out to be that.
Okay.
All right. So this comes from the U1 rho, U1 dagger. This comes from the U2 rho, U2 rho, and then you switch things. And there's a renaming of labels to make it look consistent, because keep in mind this thing is swapping arguments. So it's kind of the conjugate, so you can do stuff. If there's manipulations in it, this is correct. Very good one. More questions?
So in the first term, the new is with t prime, and in the Weimann, if it is with t.
Oh, OK, let me just check that one. This is an eta. This is an eta. Thank you. Is that the same that you said?
That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, well, sorry about that. Okay. I thought you meant the order of the arguments in the moment. I nodded the face. Good then. All right, more questions. All right. So now it comes the quantum information on arguments. We have the final state. So we substitute the state for like the field state by the vacuum. We substitute the state of the two detectors by the 2 gram states. And you get that assuming, this is general, by the way, of course. I'm not assuming, all that I'm assuming here is that the detectors and the field start in an uncorrelated state. To do this expression, all the assumptions that went in is that rho zero is actually equal to rho AB, whatever the detector state is, times rho field for any states, OK? Only uncorrelated at the beginning. If we particularize to rho field is just the vacuum, and then we particularize to rho AB is just the 2 grounds, you see, if you ask S matrix, what would happen here? What would S matrix say would happen in this case? Everything is in the ground state. You let it evolve. That would happen for infinite times. No? What would the rotating wave approximation in quantum optics would tell us that happens there for infinite times if the switching was nothing? Actually, the answer is that, like nothing. Because there's no terms a dagger, or a dagger sigma plus that can excite this thing in the rotating wave approximation. Okay? The rotating wave approximation predicts that nothing happens. S matrix, if you take infinite time limits, it would predict that nothing happens. The reason why something happens here is because we have a finite duration of the interaction. Okay? Well, in space and time, a finite region of interaction in space time. All right. So, assuming that, we get that the final state of a time t of AB, did I call it t?
No, just AB, yeah.
The final state is of the following form. I'm not going to write, so the density matrix, so I express this in the basis GA GB EA GB, GA, EB, EA, EB. So I'm representing in a matrix, I'm using a matrix representation for the final state because, of course, it's a four-dimensional quantum state. So it makes sense to represent it in a 4x4 matrix, right? And I'm using this basis. So the diagonal term here is the GA, GB cross GA, GB, okay? So the probability of finding it both in the ground state, for example. The last diagonal term would be the probability of finding both in the excited state, and so on and so forth. Okay? So in that basis, you can write this as follows. LAA minus LBB. LAA. LAB. LAB star. LBB. M star. M. Zero. And everything else is zero. So this is a next of course, plus order lambda nu. All right. So the expressions, so if you want to get the exact value for those expressions, I'll give you a reference because it's not that relevant for what I want to make. I just want you to know where it comes from. Hold on. Sometimes using technology is great. Sometimes kind of delays you a little bit more. Sorry about that. Well, I can't believe that I lost that. It will be fast though, don't worry, hopefully. All right, and then. There we go. All right, so you can check, for example, well, actually this one, to use the same notation, this one, PRD 92-06-40-42-2015. Actually co-authored by one PSI student, ex-PSI student, Alejandro Pozas, and myself. All right, so if you want to check what the values of these are and where they come about, they come out of like solving this, right? Those integrals and pick in particular. Well, not really picking the state as we did. So you get a matrix like that. And here's why I believe they did the inconsistent expansion, though. To people doing quantum info or even quantum optics, probably a matrix like that is bothersome. And the reason it's bothersome because people would say, is this even a positive operator? Right? Because you learn that a matrix of this form with a zero in here cannot be positive. So if you have whatever elements, real elements in the diagonal, complex elements here, and a zero here, you're not going to have a positive operator. That is true. You can prove this matrix has a negative eigenvalue. It's very easy to prove. Diagonalize it, and you get a negative eigenvalue. So people didn't like to have a zero here. So they really wanted an element in here. So they did what, you know, the element that goes in here is the one that you get at fourth order when you do the second order expansion and you cross the two. And they felt better about, I don't know, I'm just guessing. I don't know. This is just, I kind of guess what is in people's minds, right? But the reason that probably some people were okay with that is because they prefer a matrix with something here than nothing. Because nothing is not a positive operator. But does it have to be a positive operator, people? It does not. It just needs to be a positive operator up to second order in perturbation theory. Agreed? The negative eigenvalue of this matrix is fourth order in lambda, very easy to prove. Of course, that thing is in here, if you want. And of course, it's in here with the other fourth order terms that you're forgetting if you actually do the wrong thing in the expansion. Okay? So super important. Having a zero here in perturbation theory, it's fine. Because you need your operators to be positive. You need, depending on what expansion you pick, the Dyson expansion preserves the trace. And of all orders in perturbation theory, when you're consistent, trace is one. That's what the Dyson expansion does for you. You can get others. You can get the Magnus expansion. That one preserves the volume of phase space. You can get different expansions that preserve different things. But you cannot preserve everything at the perturbation theory. You cannot preserve the positivity of rho at the same time that you preserve the trace in a perturbative expansion. Or you pick one of them. But it's still correct. It's totally correct to do that. What is incorrect, though, is to add a fourth order term in here. That is incorrect, because if you add that, you need to add all the fourth order terms that appear everywhere else. All right? That understood, people? So if you read those papers, you know what the problem is. What else? Something about the perturbative expansion of that. OK. Now we can compute. So this matrix here, in general, is non-separable. It does not represent a separable state. It's entangled. And we can pick our favorite measure of entanglement for that state. What is your favorite measure of entanglement? Can people tell me? Opinions, anyone? Ah, good, good. Von Neumann entropy. Can we use that here? Can we use the entanglement entropy here? No, why not? Right, this state is not pure. So you would not like to use the entanglement entropy. What other measures of entanglement do you know? And this is an honest question. I don't know how much.
Negativity.
Negativity is a good one. You've seen that one in class here? Have they seen negativity? Because you're in Brisbane, so I don't know.
I don't know.
Have you guys seen negativity?
Briefly at the end of the course.
OK. Well, let me just tell you what negativity is. Have you heard about Peres criteria, Peres criterion for entanglement, for separability? Peres criterion tells you that the Peres criterion is a sufficient condition for entanglement. A sufficient condition for entanglement that tells you if the partial transpose density matrix is non-positive, then the state is entangled. You know, the rationale is kind of neat. It's like, right, if I transpose only one of them, like I do transpose on one of them, if there are correlations between them, you know, I mean, this is hand wave, yeah? This is not what it is. If there are like correlations in between them, right? Then I'm gonna mess up. When I'm just swapping this, I'm gonna mess up and no longer have a positive operator. If there isn't, there aren't correlations, then I can do the swapping and don't affect the coherences, so still a positive operator kind of thing. Of course, this is a rigorous thing, it's not hand wave, you can do it. It's a sufficient condition for entanglement that tells you that if the density matrix partial transpose, density matrix has at least one negative eigenvalue, then the state is entangled. By the way, for 2x2, for 2x2 and 3x3, so meaning two-dimensional, like four-dimensional quantum state of two parts that are dimension two, this is necessary and sufficient too. So in the case of two qubits, as is this case, having a negative eigenvalue, it's if and only if the state is entangled. You can quantify how much entangled by, okay, let's sum all the negative eigenvalues of the partially transposed density matrix. And that gives you an idea of how strongly entangled you are. In fact, negativity is an entanglement monotone. It increases with entanglement. Okay, so you can use it as a measure of entanglement. The reason we use that one most of the times is, well, concurrence is another one you could use that is good for this. Mixed states and above all mixed states of arbitrary dimensions, computer entanglement is tough. Concurrence works because these are 2x2 as well. If you have higher dimensions, if there were harmonic oscillators, for example, you could use negativity still, but keeping in mind that negativity accounts for a particular kind of entanglement, which we call distillable entanglement. I don't know if you've seen that or not, I'm just giving you a refresher on this, if not. Negativity measures how much entanglement you can actually distill into Bell states by distillation protocols. And of course, you can have something called bound entanglement in higher dimensions. That is entanglement that does not register in negativity, but also cannot be distilled directly. It needs to be activated if you want to distill it in terms of Bell pairs. Okay? For here, we don't get those problems because it's a 2x2 system. So negativity is a full measure of entanglement here. So negativity defined as the sum of the negative eigenvalues. So the negativity for this, so negativity, which is the sum of negative eigenvalues of the partially of rho AB TA, for example, or TB. Where this represents the partial transpose. We only transpose on A or on B. Okay? Then negativity for this case is the minimum between 0, M minus LAA. Okay, so let's think a little bit about this. So the term LAA and the term LBB are local terms. LAA is proportional to lambda A squared. LBB is proportional to lambda B squared. LAB is lambda A lambda B. And M is lambda A lambda B. All right? They all actually comes from local, even though you have two that cross. So the cool point, the cool result on the, oh, by the way, the assumption here, if detectors are identical. So there's another assumption to get this. Detectors have to be identical, as in like they're the same detector with the same profile and the same gap, omega, and the same switchings. So if the detectors are identical, the same shape of the switchings, you can place them wherever you want. If the detectors are identical, you get that the negativity is a competition between terms that are proportional to lambda A, lambda B, and terms that are proportional to lambda A squared, or lambda B squared, because identical, same coupling. So what this is telling you is that the entanglement that is harvested, so you see, keep in mind, these two detectors were originally in the ground state. And they evolved, they could be space-like separated, no problem. Remember, the Wyman function would not be zero in space-like separation. They will get entangled. And we will, in the next lecture on Monday, we will see how much and how it goes. Okay? I'll show you in slides all the cool stuff, all the cool features about it. But the key point to learn from here is that entanglement in the detectors harvested from the field is a competition between local terms and terms that are, if you want, correlation terms. So yeah, you can extract entanglement, but you know, the local interaction with the state of the field, with the vacuum, for example, in this case, gets in the way. It's kind of noisy. When you switch on a single detector in the vacuum, you get excitations, those vacuum fluctuations. Those local excitations get in the way of harvesting the entanglement from the field through a coupling like this. Again, so competition between correlation terms and noise terms, if you want. So you may think, OK, how can I make this big? And you say, oh, yeah, yeah. Pick a sharper switching. That definitely increases this M. Remember, if it's adiabatic and we wait for infinite times, then it's going to be zero everywhere. So if you make it sharper, you're going to get more correlations harvested. But also, you're going to get more noise. So which one wins? You see, like, there's a competition between noise and correlations. So for entanglement harvesting in particular, as we will discuss next day, having a very smooth switching is helpful. Yeah, of course, smooth switching means less entanglement, but then powerful M's, right? But also less noise. And noise is felt earlier in perturbative regimes than the correlation harvesting. So before we leave today, just one comment. This is the technical part of entanglement harvesting, the simplest scenario of entanglement harvesting. If you want to see all these calculations in more detail, this paper is full detail. It's got appendices where all the integrals are all solved. So this paper you can check is full detail. In fact, don't check that paper. Check the archive version, because there are typos in the published version that bother me a lot. I recommend you check this one instead. Archive 15060301. Check this one instead of the published version, OK? That one has no typos that we know of. So the point of what we're going to discuss the next day is, OK, nice. So you are telling me, as not completely unexpected based on the poll that we got here, you can harvest entanglement from the vacuum of the field. OK, how does that depend on everything? Like, can you do it? Two kinds of thinking, right? Oh, can I use this as a source of entanglement? Can I use this as an infinite source of entanglement? Maybe. Can I keep extracting entanglement from the vacuum? And how does that go? Right? Can I use that in technology? Can I actually use this as a source of entanglement? And the other question is like, oh, how fundamental is this? How does that depend on, I don't know, the structure of spacetime? Does it depend on the geometry of the background spacetime, and how? Does it depend on topology? How many methods do you know to measure the topology of spacetime? Well, I mean, some of them are based on waiting, no? Sending a signal and waiting, and maybe signal come back, and that tells us something about topology. But what about measurements that are not that non-local, like measurements that are finite in time? Can you tell about topology? We will discuss that entanglement harvesting is extremely sensitive to the space-time background. It can feel curvature, but not only that, it can feel topology. So we will discuss that in the next lecture. Also, we will discuss if this can be actually used as a source of entanglement or not, and what are the issues that happen if you do or if you don't. OK, that will be the next lecture. And hopefully, that will be the last lecture. That was supposed to be one lecture, but I liked. This was fun. No. So I appreciate that. And then we have time to discuss all these other things better next day. And when we finish that, there are two more topics that are left. One is quantum collect calling. So communication, like all these issues, right? Communication through quantum fields. For real, like wireless communication, what kind of things you can do that you don't do nowadays for some reason. And the other one is quantum energy teleportation. And when that is finished, so hopefully I can get to quantum energy teleportation before the last tutorial. Maybe we can do that, right? In the last tutorial, we can do a discussion with all the people there. And that could be a fun one. All right. I'll see you on Monday. Have a good weekend.